Welcome to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Show, live from Ferd Sports Bar and Grill, providing a positive perspective from the Pee Wees to the Preps to the Pros in Champa Bay. Now, here's your host, Mike Rickard.
Well, I know for the 4th of July, they're doing a real big firework display, and every year
they always do every year.
Yeah, it's no joke. It rivals Disney World. I'll tell you what, you know, save the money, save the trip down I-4, that catastrophic road, and go to the Threshers game, enjoy it there.
I told you I worked for the Ted Williams Foundation, mm-hmm. and then we would do the Phillies, did all the parks, the fundraisers, and I worked that park two or three times. That's a beautiful park.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's great. I mean, great, great. I love the berm. Being able to sit out on the berm, kind of just sit back, relax, and you can walk around. I do think they need more water fountains. I will say that. There's only one water fountain in the whole park. I was looking around. I was like, what the heck's the deal with that?
I think that was the COVID issue. But I always go to the Clearwater Jazz Festival.
Oh, yeah.
And they're redoing the entire downtown area there for a new facility because it's right on the water typically. Mm-hmm. Well, last year they had it at the stadium. And they're having it this year at the stadium. I enjoyed that more than anything else. But I started sharing with the people on. I said, you need to come up here for a Threshers game.
Oh, yeah.
Because you got the fire, because they did fireworks afterwards. That's why. And I thought, that's impressive. A lot of fun.
You have to stay to the end of the game also. Spend a couple extra bucks. They do this thing where they roll out a tire to, like, right around, you know, right center field. And you buy, it's $1 tennis ball, and you chuck them out there. And if you make it in the tire, you win the cash prize. It's a lot of fun. I won it one time. I still got a little bit of an arm on me. This time, I skipped one over, but it's a lot of fun, and the money always rolls over.
Go back, and is it a 50-50, or do you get the entire pot?
So you get the whole pot. So everybody puts in.
The tire's located in center field?
Right center field. So they roll it out. Some guy,
where are you throwing from? The pitcher's mound?
You can go anywhere on the field. You go to right down the first baseline, and everyone kind of gathers. Everyone has their bag of tennis balls with numbers written on it. Hopefully you get a lucky number. And you toss it out there, and, you know, hopefully you make it in there. But you probably have, I think the balls are numbered all the way up to, like, into the 800s. It's ridiculous how many balls they throw out there trying to make it in. And it's a lot of fun. And most of the time, I think the last week's cash prize was over $300. So, I mean,
nice drinking money when it's a dollar draw night.
Oh, we can get a crazy weekend going. We make it in the tire? We're on the tire.
I'd have to be the DD. All right, I'll talk about this in a minute because I want to talk about a couple of promotions. That's why I loved minor league baseball. This is hour number two on the Tantalk family of affiliates. You're listening to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network. We are live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill down here at 13th and Central. They've been here for going on 30 years, providing Champa Bay with the best wings in the bay. And, of course, it's an entertainment center. And we've got some great entertainment modifications, announcements, and options taking place down here at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill. Mark and I have been brainstorming of late. And as I said, our affiliates, each and every week, we've got our affiliate 106.1 FM and AM 1340, and that is WTAN. You can listen to that all the way down here. WZHR AM 1400, 104.3 FM, WDCF AM 1350, and 102.3 FM. And, of course, streaming live on RadioSt.Pete.com and Hoovy.TV, where they archive each and every week for us. And I don't want to, and I might start distributing this with these youngsters, if they're interested, to do 1 2-minute a week. The 2-minute daily sports update. You pick the content, you voice it, you send it up to Joel at Sunshine 96.7 FM, and then they air it. And you might not be able to do it with your new responsibilities at Raymond James, but you might be able to tell your pops you're going to go out and I do them at night.
Yeah, I mean that's usually when the juices are flowing the best for me. I'm a late night,
Am I. He's like a grandpa. He gets up early. No, I probably. Really? He gets up early. You've already been to Fort DeSoto today?
Yeah, it was beautiful out there.
You were over at Fort DeSoto?
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Had a late night. Then he's at Fort DeSoto. He was here at 10 o'clock this morning. That's the big old Oscar Garner III, Ben Botham across from me. We bring you a fresh and a positive perspective from the peewees, the preps, the pros, each and every day, every Saturday. And then every day we do the two-minute sports update. And you can hear that on Sunshine 96.7 FM, Hoovy.tv, and all of our Tan Talk affiliates. About 7 a.m., 8 o'clock on the Sunshine 96.7 FM. And in the afternoon on 96.7 FM around 2 o'clock with Jay Kobe on Sunshine 96.7 FM. What are you doing over there, Michigan? Are you hot? I got a fan on you.
Dude, it's you had me unplugged, the one that was over here. You took away my own.
It sounded
house.
Like we were at Tampa International.
The plane's flying over.
It sounded like we had the helicopters coming in.
It was brutal. And here comes Michael Lortz. He thinks he's going to set up here. There's not going to be a lot of exposure. We'll put you back out front, buddy, for your book signing. You met Ben Botham.
Yeah, I met him at the Tampa Baseball Museum.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And this is the big old Oscar Garner III.
Hello, man. Good to see you again.
Michael Lortz. I think you two have met before as well. Yeah, as we talk baseball. He is the author of Curveball at the
Crossroads. It's a pretty neat book. It's a pretty neat book. He gave me the little elevator pitch when I saw him at the Tampa Baseball Museum, and it sounds
I can't amazing. Imagine him giving anybody a elevator pitch on his baseball.
It was
in
a little
book.
Longer. It was a little longer than elevator pitch.
I'd say
it's still very interesting.
He's that passionate, and I applaud him for it. How you been, brother?
Doing well. Have you read the book yet?
I'm about halfway through. I've got I've been blessed. I have had 13 authors on in the 20 months that I've been.
I think I was first, wasn't I?
No, you weren't.
Second, third, fourth.
You were third.
Third, okay, I can deal with third.
You were third. It was old guys. I can't think of the name of their book. The book about old guy basketball. It'll come to me in a minute. And then it was Brandy Winans' book, and then yours.
Okay, I was at the Oxford Exchange Book Fair downtown Tampa about a month ago, and one of the people that was set up right next to me who had a basketball book. He said he was on your show as well.
Jim Sweeney.
Yes,
Jim. He was the first guy.
Jim and I had a really good
old school hoops. That's the name of the book. It just came to me.
Yep, we talked for a while and dropped your name quite a bit. So
yeah, F bomb me. What'd you say?
No, we
you dropped
off radio.
Yeah, you dropped my name.
Dropped your name, of course. You know, we're like, God. Yeah, you know, Mike, yeah.
People have asked Oscar that downtown. He just walks away. Ben's a little kinder than Oscar, so he hasn't had a chance to really get to know me and say that. How's life?
Things have been good. Things have been good, man. You know, the book ebbs and flows. We have some really good months. I did about 3 book signings, bookstores and everything last month. This month, I actually am getting over COVID. I had COVID about 3 weeks ago.
I had something, but I tested negative 4 times, but I was on my ASS. For almost 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, well, for me, it was only about 5 days. A lot of joint pains, headaches, stuff like that, and, you know, the average flu stuff. But I'm well over it, well past it, so now it's time to get back on the road and sell some books.
Get back on the craft beer wagon.
Yeah, that'd be nice, too.
That's the thing. All right, we've already talked to Peter Gollenbach. You know, he's an accomplished author, and Ben's our baseball historian, as you well know by now.
Yeah.
Let's get your take. I know you grew up a Mets fan, and you got to be pleased, but you knew Atlanta wasn't going away.
Nope.
But let's get your perception and what the Rays should do as they plan the second half of the season, because there's all kinds of opinions. Ben's got an opinion. He wants to clean house with all the old guys. And
there are many old guys. Well, 28 is not old.
I'm just not a Kevin Kiermaier guy. I just don't like his attitude. Something about him just kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah,
he's the face of the freaking franchise, and he's a great guy. Well, Wander Franco now has become.
Yeah, Wander Franco's definitely taken over as the face, and probably also Brett Phillips.
Typical youth movement. See,
yeah.
Push the old guys out the pasture.
I do love the old guys. You know me. I'm
waiting.
Big fan
I think
of
I have
that.
A grass field waiting for me, and I'm not even that old.
See, I think I'm on the chopping block sometimes when I look at these baseball cards of these young guys. They're born in 2000, 2003, and they're in the minor leagues already. Makes me feel like I'm an old man.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have a young man on our next guest. So continue your perception of what they should do, the balance of the season,
you know,
and then give us a snapshot of your Mets.
You know, it's interesting from a Rays perspective because there is an expanded wild card this year. You know, or going in, you know, they expanded the wild card. So more teams can make it. It just adds more more excitement. It adds, obviously, more people into the stadium. You know, more people will be buying tickets in late September nationwide. But do the Rays... I mean, the Yankees are running away with this. There's no doubt the Yankees are running away with it. Toronto's... Their young talent is now mature. You know, guys like Vlad Jr. and things like that. So...
Bo Bichette.
Yep, Bo Bichette. You know, their young talent is amazing. And they're not going away. You know, and then if Boston gets back on track, which they've shown they're getting back on track, that's a four-team race just in the AL East. So do you cut your losses here if you're the Rays and just say, you know, we're going to trade the Kiermaiers. We're only going to keep five or six folks here. And we're going to trade the G-Mans and all the other people that we can get at least a double-A prospect for. And, you know, and just look for next year. And then, you know, what are you competing with next year? Because the Blue Jays aren't going away. The Yankees aren't going away. The Red Sox aren't going away.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there with the Rays because they're struggling with, first of all, finding the new stadium. They harp on that every single day. And I'm a big proponent of them staying here in St. Petersburg. I really don't want to see them leave, whether that means that they get a new stadium closer to the water or if they do some remodeling over at Tropicana. I think Tropicana is just fine. But I think they have to do something that continues to bring fans out to the ballpark because that's a major issue when it seems like there's more fans at a minor league Threshers game than at a, you know, at a Rays game, professional baseball. It's a little concerning.
So I don't know if you've gone through and looked at any of my past research, any of the Rays attendance stuff I've done. I've been writing about the subject since about 2014. You know, tracking what's the attendance on average Tuesday versus average Saturday, everything like that. And, I mean, you're correct in that minor league baseball, especially when the weather's nice in Florida, in your Aprils and Mays, minor league baseball is absolutely competitive with the Rays.
Mm-hmm.
And when you add up the Threshers, you add up the Yankees, you add up Bradenton, and you add up Dunedin, you add them all, and it's about 75% of the Rays' attendance every night, Monday through Thursday. And the Rays can't compete with that. So if you get rid of all the minor league teams, short of doing that, and that would take an act of God, you know,
yeah, but
Rays don't have that kind of sweat.
That wouldn't be worth it. And I think that would be detrimental to the baseball scene here in the area.
I disagree.
Really?
100% disagree. I am of the big thing that the Yankees either move to Orlando or Havana, Cuba. Because the Yankees' presence here is detrimental to the Rays' presence. Because you have the biggest brand in baseball with their sub-headquarters here. And if you drive down Dale Mabry, the perfect place for the Rays to play is where Steinbrenner Field is. But the Yankees just beat them to the plot. About 3 years before Tropicana Field, or before the Rays were a thing, the Yankees were already breaking construction on the lot on Steinbrenner
Field.
See,
but there's no reason that Tropicana Field shouldn't be a hub of baseball. I mean, look where we're at Ferg Sports Bar. You go down Central, you go down First Avenue. It's an amazing place to come for a date night. You could take your girlfriend, take whoever to the game. Come on down, enjoy the plethora of bars, all the great restaurants down here. I know the Rays are trying stuff. They added Ballpark and Rec to the
yep.
stadium, but they need to do more in order to bring out the younger audience to show that, look, this is a great spot for young people to enjoy and to have a great time even outside of baseball. If you come for an early game, you spend I believe their tickets should be a little cheaper so that way they can facilitate that. But you know, there's no reason with how many young people are down here in St. Petersburg they couldn't.
The problem that the Rays' biggest two problems is lack of population in St. Pete and lack of population within a 30-minute radius.
Even in Pinellas County,
with
a growing population
absolutely.
Here,
I wrote an article for FanGraphs, which is one of the biggest baseball research websites out there, that the Rays were dead last in surrounding 30-minute radius population radius. So you take an average population of say 3 million, half of them are baseball fans. So right off the bat, you're going to say 1.5 million, and then you've got in Tampa Bay only about 50% of baseball fans are Rays fans. So now you're only at 750,000 fans. And the population at St. Pete, or most of those fans, are Tampa, Brandon, New Tampa, stuff like that, especially the wealth. You look south of Tropicana Field, and the per capita income is far lower than if you were to go to Brandon, Valrico.
The incomes are lower. We are one of the lowest, or if not the lowest, for per capita income in, what is it, the 30-mile or the 90-mile? I forgot how they measure it.
It's really, especially south of St. Pete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you were to go to, obviously, Waterside, you know, anywhere, you know, where there's mansions right along the beach or whatever. Different story. But zip code-wise, south of Tropicana Field doesn't have the spending power And then with obviously with gas prices and everything in the last couple of years. But to say that, you know, the Rays need to increase their marketing, they've been needing to do that for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to finally get an epiphany that's going to draw in 20,000 a night, Monday through Thursday, if they haven't done it now, they're not going to put the energy in to do it.
Let me chime back in on this part. And let me ask you if you have any color on this, because I get my hair cut south of, in those zip codes, I frequent that area. I like that community. And I'm kind of a fish out of water, so the history here is a little bit different. I deal with the Tigers. I know what they've been going through, but the Rays are new to me. What I've heard from specifically the black community in South St. Pete is that, you know, some of their neighborhood was displaced by this team, this organization setting kind of this little community around it here. And some of them, even, you know, the closest people who would want to come to these games, they feel a little bit jaded by the team, and they don't even want to participate. So they're fighting a lot of battles on different fronts here.
Yeah, and I wouldn't blame the team. You know, the Rays ownership has only been since 2005. The stadium has been here since 1985. It was the county commissioners here in Pinellas County that were like, we're going to build this dome stadium in what property values were low, you know, because in wherever there's low income, it's low property values, and that's just the way it is. So they leveled the Gaslight District, which was a historic black community, and leveled 90-something acres to build parking lots and a dome stadium with no team. So they were like, oh, through, you know, throughout the whole late 1980s, they courted the White Sox, they courted the Giants, and they courted the Mariners, and they courted any team that would want to come here. And those teams would have had attendance issues as well. You know, had the Giants moved here in the late 80s, they'd be fighting the same population demographic struggles that the Rays face now. They probably have just faced it 10 years.
They definitely wouldn't have the rings that they have that they've gotten over the past decades.
So. No, not at all. You know, it's a totally different Giants situation. Barry Bonds might not have signed there. You know, and
true,
that was the catalyst to go from Candlestick Park to what is it now? Whatever the stadium is out there in San Francisco. I know it's got a corporate name. But yeah, it was Barry Bonds that really sparked interest back with the Giants in the early 90s
when he went from
Pittsburgh to San Francisco. So Barry Bonds might not even sign. So the Giants team that might have moved here might have been struggling and looking for a new stadium or new location anyway. So baseball history would have been totally different. So yeah, you're exactly correct in that there is still that long-term animosity from the neighborhoods to, I mean, it's now focused on the Rays, but it could have been focused on the county commissioners.
Yeah.
That said, why did you level our neighborhood to build this stadium? What was your grand big strategy? Because it didn't work. You know, and I know one of the plans, Mayor Welch, when it comes to the future design of this area, whether there's a baseball stadium here or not, he wants to re-engage the community. Bring in small businesses, bring in minority-owned businesses, and try to get this community back where it was.
And that's something that I've heard as well, that there is a push, there is an awareness of that sentiment. They know where the gap is, and they're, hey, come over here. I don't know if you ever see, but there's a parking lot just to the west of Tropicana. Strong black community. The churches get set up there every weekend. Of course not, you know, if they have a game or anything like that, but they get set up there on the weekends, they bring the shops out, they bring the kids out, they have a good community there. I think that type of stuff, getting involved right back here on this corner of 16th and Central, maybe possibly getting some sort of partnerships inside the stadium to give some equity back to the community, you could really kind of retool the narrative around here. And I think, you know, if it's a long-term play, if it's keeping the team here, those are the type of moves you got to make if you're going to consider the future of this team and being part of the community. And I'd like to echo your sentiment too, because the Yankees were here last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I went to that game. I sat right behind. Is it Low or Low? I always forget.
Wait, which one is it? Low? Low. It's Low. Yeah.
I sat right behind.
Because I know we had Low for a little while, so now it's Low.
So I sat right behind him in I think it was left field. There were so many Yankees around me. There were so many MVP chants for Judge. And I'm sitting here like, is this a home game for the Yanks? Like, come on now.
But you got to think about, like, where does that come from? Well, first of all, there's been an influx of even more Northerners in the last few years escaping COVID. you know, then
we got two of them right here.
Then in the past, and there's always been a trickle, but now it's become a stream,
right,
or a river of people coming down to Florida, whether and not to get into politics, but whether that's politics or it's COVID or it's taxes or it's just better weather.
You got it. Yeah, you're on the nose.
So they came down. And for them, the Yankees play here 9 times a year. So they're going to turn that into an event every 9 times. Rays fans have to support the team 81 games of the season.
True.
And if you're a season ticket holder, you know, you're trying to afford 81 games. And whereas a Yankee fan is going to look at the schedule and be like, all right, these are the 9 I'm going to go to. So I'm definitely going to go to all 9. I'm going to be loud. I'm going to be heard.
Right.
And that's the same with Red Sox fans. It's the same with Pirates fans, you know, from the local area who maybe came up from Bradenton to come see the team, see the Pirates this weekend. And it's just because that stream of Northerners has come down, and the Yankees have such a presence here. And they've had a presence here. They had a presence here from the 20s to the 50s.
So this has been a long-standing, of course, with Steinbrenner.
The Yankees have had several fields within the Pinellas County area.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, Babe Ruth played on them. Lou Gehrig, all these big-name guys. And a lot of little league teams still play on these fields. Okay. So, I mean, the Yankees are well-rooted
strong history.
Here.
Okay.
And that's why we brought a major league franchise down here.
Right.
It was because the rich history of baseball. There was so much minor league teams and spring training that would come down here, and even for the black community with Negro League teams, they would come down here, and this was a stop on their way down south to reach out and play. The Clowns would oftentimes play down here in St. Petersburg.
What city was that, Clowns?
The Indianapolis Clowns.
Okay.
And they would play down here in St. Petersburg, and the owners of the Clowns lived down here. And I think that's a way of reaching out back to the black community is kind of highlight the achievements of the Negro Leagues in St. Petersburg and teach kind of the history that they had here. And the Rays, I know every team does, you know, a Jackie Robinson Day. They highlight the achievements, and especially now with their statistics being, you know, recognized as Major League statistics, it would be great if they do some kind of effort to educate the local population on the achievements that happened right here in the community, and hopefully that would be able to bring a more diverse group to the Trop.
Yeah.
See, the Rays have a two-headed struggle here. You know, at first they're trying to appeal to the local community and get a more diverse crowd to come into the, and I 100% agree with those efforts, and we really need to do that because or else baseball will die out demographically.
Of course.
But at the same time, they also need those corporate ticket sales. They need the big companies. They need the big major sponsorships because Major League Baseball is expensive.
Yeah.
And so the more Raymond James, the more Tampa General Hospitals, the more, you know, Hard Rock Casinos, you have buying season ticket packages and doing advertising, they feel that this is not the best location for them to stay into the corporate community, and their corporate needs would be better served on the Tampa side because Tampa is the more corporate of the two cities.
And that's such an ugly side of that, because I'm a Raymond James employee, you know, 9 to 5, and we were out there last night, the Pirates game, deep. I think we had like 60 tickets bought up, right? And that's part of it. We do that a couple times a year. We go out there, have a good time. You know, we even got some of our interns on the big screen. I don't know if anybody saw that on TV, mm-hmm. but we got some interns on the big screen. Those type of involvements, you know, we got the name on literally Raymond James Stadium, right? So with the more this finance firms, a lot of stuff propping up in downtown Tampa. I mean, they're building skyscrapers left and right. You can't spin around without seeing a crane.
Right.
Like, if that's where those dollars are going to be, that's kind of an ugly side of it. I mean, you can't run away from it, literally, you know, so.
And like I said, I mean, it's a two-headed thing. And so Mayor Welch is like, well, if the Rays leave, I still want to redevelop this area to be a more diverse, to be a more inclusive area with small businesses and everything like that. Rays, what are you doing? Because we need to,
right.
We need to reserve.
Radio. Radio. St. Pete. Radio St. Pete. St. Petersburg, Clearwater, Tampa Bay, Florida, USA.
This is VOA News. Reporting by remote, I'm Joe Ramsey. The Norwegian security service BST has raised its terror alert to the highest level after a shooting left two people dead and many wounded during Pride Week in Oslo. A gunman opened fire in Oslo's nightlife district in what police are investigating as a possible terrorist attack. Investigators said the suspect, identified as a 42-year-old Norwegian citizen originally from Iran, was arrested after opening fire at three locations in downtown Oslo. While the motive was unclear, organizers of Oslo Pride canceled a parade that was set for Saturday as the highlight of a week-long festival. One of the shootings happened outside a bar popular with the city's LGBTQ community. Vital medical supplies reached hospitals on Saturday in the remote area of Afghanistan hit by an earthquake that killed more than 1,000 people this week as the country's Taliban government appealed for more international aid. Authorities have called off the search for survivors in the mountainous southeastern region near the Pakistani border following Wednesday's 6.1 magnitude quake, which also injured about 2,000 people and damaged or destroyed 10,000 homes. Aftershocks on Friday killed at least five more people in an area some 160 kilometers or 100 miles southeast of the capital, Kabul, and medical staff said subpar healthcare facilities were hampering their efforts to help the injured. The disaster is a major test for Afghanistan's hardline Taliban rulers, who have been shunned by many foreign governments since they seized control of the country last year due to concerns about human rights. Find more at voanews.com. This is VOA News.
Here's the Tampa Bay weather. Partly to mostly cloudy this afternoon with scattered showers and storms. The high 92. It'll feel like it's 102 to 105 degrees with a light and variable wind. Scattered evening storms, then partly cloudy tonight with the low down to 78. Partly to mostly cloudy on Sunday with scattered afternoon storms. The high 92. It'll feel like it's closer to 100 degrees. Scattered evening storms, then partly to mostly cloudy Sunday night. The low down to 76. This is Nowcast meteorologist Matthew Harding for Sunshine 96.7 FM, Radio St. Pete.
Here is our look at Saturday afternoon music from GoTonight.com, supported in St. Petersburg by Ruby's Elixir and Fresco's Waterfront Bistro, Soulfish. This afternoon, 1 o'clock at Three Daughters Brewing in St. Petersburg. Amist is out on the dock at Bon Appetit this afternoon, weather permitting, from noon until 4. It is Carlos and Joe, 1 o'clock at Bongo's Beach Bar and Grill, St. Pete Beach. Terry Bidwell plays at 2 o'clock this afternoon at the Bridge Tender Inn. Eric Vaughn at Clancy's in Bradenton beginning this afternoon at 5. Meanwhile, on this Saturday afternoon, we see Chuck McClure playing Jimmy's Fish House in Clearwater beginning at 1 o'clock this afternoon. We have Against the Sun at Niagara Tap beginning at 5 o'clock in Largo. Bud Good, Mike Hoke, and Tony Treadway at North End Tap House in Gulfport beginning this afternoon at 3. It is Cross Junction at Orange County Choppers Roadhouse in Clearwater at noon, playing until 3, and then Stealing Crowns take the stage at 4:30 at the Orange County Choppers Roadhouse in Clearwater. It's Rock and Rob at the Ozona Brewing Company in Ozona beginning at 2. Sammy Davis Jr. plays at 2 o'clock this afternoon at Peggy's Corral in Palmetto. Night Shift in Looper, 1 o'clock, playing a private event this afternoon. Gilly and the Girl, 1 o'clock at Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino over in Tampa. Ricardo Fontus, 12 noon at Thunderbird Icky Woo Woo Tiki Hut on Treasure Island, playing until 4, and then the Dune Doctor takes over inside the Tiki Hut at 4:30 at the Thunderbird. And the Michael Mack Band, 12 noon at Wicked Cantina, Bradenton Beach. Be sure to tune in the 5 o'clock hour this afternoon. We'll give you the full Saturday night lineup from GoTonight.com. You can link to GoTonight from RadioSt.Pete.com, where we stream many of these same great local musicians worldwide 24 hours a day. And you can hear them on the radio in downtown St. Petersburg here on Sunshine 96.7 FM, Radio St. Pete, where local music lives.
I protected it like it was my child. I felt this awesome responsibility that I still feel this way about it. I covered it up so the light wouldn't affect it. I became overprotective of this photograph.
Ron Coddington tells us about his entree into the world of historic photographs from the Civil War on our next Constant Wonder.
Our Sunday lunchtime conversation at 12:15.
Thank you.